My name is Rachel Rofe. I created the show because I wanted to help you see that if you have a choice, you can choose a better life. If you're listening to this podcast, you're in a pretty fortunate position. You have free will, ability to connect to the internet, and access to all kinds of new education. This podcast is meant to help you make the most of your good fortune. We talk with all kinds of people here from all walks of life because I want you to see that no matter what your situation, there's always a way to create a life that you're proud of. Welcome to part two of this interview. So in this section, Steve and I talk about his books that he has on Kindle, so the income that he makes from them. So he makes at least five figures per month from his Kindle book. So we talk about different things around that. So how he's able to come up with book titles, his process for writing. For him, he started getting into foreign rights. So we talk about that. We talk about, is this really a sustainable business model? Because people have been talking about having it, it's harder to make money. That's certainly been my experience, that it's harder to make money with Kindle. So we go over that and how Steve feels about that, how he's able to generate a list from his books. So for him, at the height of one of his books, he was generating between 200 and 300 people on his list every single day. So we go over that, how to revive books, different marketing strategies. I mean, we really cover a lot in this interview. So I have been really excited to get it out. I hope that you like it and enjoy. I have looked at your income reports that you're super generous in your transparency with, and I know you've made as much as the highest I've seen. I didn't record when I was looking up, like when I was creating questions for today, but I know one month you made $56,639.35 from writing Kindle books in just one month. I know that the income can go up and down, and so it's been like there, and then I've seen like $21,000 a month and different things. So I'm curious for you, are you still seeing like ups and downs with your Kindle books?
Oh, absolutely. And I would say last month, February, was probably one of the worst months I would say in the whole year. Reports aren't going to come out for another, I would say, 10 days or so, but I know it's a pretty off month. What's weird is I'm almost at the point where I'm just kind of not really impacted by how much I make. Actually, I feel that's kind of a positive because I don't, for a long time, that used to be kind of part of my identity that I have to make X amount of dollars every month. But now it's just like, all right, I've been making more than I ever thought I would for at least a year and a half, so I'm pretty happy with no matter what outcome comes from it. But to kind of answer your like Kindle-specific question, I would say for everything that's out there, podcasting, blogging, Kindle books, it's just only going to get more competitive. It's only going to get more challenging, and I think that part of the reason my income has also been reduced is the fact that I've kind of gotten away in the last 6 months from the things I was actually doing well. So as soon as I started stuff that's what's really working, I kind of started doing other things, which it makes no sense now in retrospect. Yeah, to kind of answer your question, is definitely up and down, and some of it's definitely my fault. Some of it's just the nature of just a competitive marketplace.
Yeah, you know, a lot of people have been saying that their Kindle income is going down. I know for me, like my Kindle income is nowhere near where it used to be, and I just started thinking like, for me, I can invest the same amount of time into something else and make so much more money. I'm curious, like, are you, you haven't given up on Kindle, though. You're still pumped about it, right?
Oh, actually, I'm totally psyched about it. And that's part of, like, what I was a little bit down. I didn't get a handle on what was in my head until I really figured it out. And I think what it is, it's just I kind of got away from the core business. And now I've actually made a decision to kind of get back to what was working. I'm excited about that. And the fact that I'm actually finally, after probably 2 years now, I'm finally actually really going to make a concerted effort to put together an information product about actually what I know. So, and I can see how inside the information product I can use my habit books as kind of a testing ground and kind of show all these different things I am kind of trying in the background. I don't really talk about much lately. But so to answer your question, I'm definitely super excited still. I still see it as an opportunity, but I don't necessarily think 100% that it's going to be the Kindle marketplace is going to be the end-all to be-all in a year or two. It might be something else, or it might be just a group of different sites they need to post on, or it might be micro-content. I'm not sure what it is going to be, but I definitely still think that self-publishing in general is a growing industry.
Yeah, that's a good point. And also, I should clarify that even though I'm saying like if the Kindle market's going down, I mean, you're still making like at least five figures a month from your books, which is pretty spectacular.
Yeah, it's definitely been a great business, and I still think people are kind of doing it wrong. So I still can shake my cane at people and still kind of how to actually build a business.
So how many books do you have total?
I have 50-ish, and I actually really don't. I think it's around 50. It's a lot of different types of books, so like 5 of those books are actually direct translations of my books just into Brazilian Portuguese and German. And then a couple of them are like smaller books that are like 4,000 to 5,000 words. So real kind of short children's books. But I would say in total, it's a little bit over 50.
And so I know you have your 2 author names and the children's books. But for your main books, you have the Steve Scott and then S.J. Scott. And one's more marketing and then one's more habit-based books. Can you explain why you have the 2 different names and which set of books performs better income-wise?
Yeah, I'll start with the second question first. So the habit books, which completely surprised me, I would say almost tenfold outperformed anything I did with the internet business books, which at the time it was completely eye-opener for me. I actually started out, because I had affiliate marketing background, blogging background, that sort of thing. I started out just by publishing, just talking about different aspects of my internet business, real kind of small content, real micro content as far as one book on outsourcing, one book on email marketing, one book on how to generate your first $1,000, like stuff like that. Like, not necessarily for the general masses, but if you're interested in the internet business, these are books I felt provide value. And about a year into it, I felt like not only was I kind of tapped out on ideas and what I could really talk about without kind of beating a dead horse, I really wasn't super into the content. And when I sat down and kind of thought about everything that I did in my life in the last decade of building a business, I realized that everything came down to kind of daily routines and what I did on a regular basis, and I realized that that kind of leads to the idea of just habits as kind of a framework for how to improve your life. And I started out as a case study for my internet business blog, and it's kind of worked into an actual viable business. I really enjoy the kind of habits kind of framework, because you can do a lot, but just by talking about habits, like for instance, I'm writing a book about exercising every day, and I feel that would be a pretty good habit-specific type of book, just talking about how you, if you don't get enough exercise, here's how to get over the obstacle that you encounter on a regular basis if you want to exercise. So it's just something that's kind of a combination of passion and profitability, I guess, to answer your question.
Yeah, that makes sense. And I've seen the same thing because I also have like a goal setting book that I know you've seen and stuff. And I've definitely seen better with my habity kind of books than my internet marketing stuff. And I'm curious then, so I know the books do better, and I guess it makes sense because it has a broader audience. Do you feel like you make more from your email list, from the habits people, or from the marketing people?
I would say right now definitely from the habits list, for the simple fact that I'm actually a pretty terrible marketer when it comes to internet business lists. Like, I'm a little gun-shy as far as what I promote, so I definitely make more with habits list, but I would say I have been laying the groundwork for the internet business list, or more specifically for the Kindle publishing list, so when I actually come out with a product, I feel that that's going to be a huge asset. I've just been kind of nurturing over the last couple of years, and I think the big payoff is when I actually will release a product. But I would say as far as actually promoting books on Amazon right now, whenever I promote a book, I would say my habits list outsells the other list by like 3-fold.
Wow. And yeah, your product, like you've been teasing about your product for such a long time. I'm like foaming, ready to buy it.
I know. I'm really good at doing small projects, and that's actually what kind of led me to self-publishing. I'm really good at sitting down and focusing on a book and getting it out there. But these large, massive, kind of larger products, I'm terrible. I keep on starting and stopping. But the reason I'm actually not afraid to talk about this now is I actually sat down with someone I really respect, someone I think is great, provides a lot of good content. I absolutely love his blog and podcast. And I don't mean to tease. I just don't know if he's ready to talk about his involvement with this. But it's someone that I highly respect. There's a lot of stuff that he can bring to the table that I can't bring to the table. And he's also someone who has put together good products and software and stuff. So I'm happy to kind of partner with him, because he adds a lot that I could never do. So, and also, I think he'll be a little bit of a kick in my butt every time I start to slack off on this. So now I feel I'm actually pretty excited about it. I'm actually ready to take action on it.
Awesome. So if you're doing the product, then I guess you think that Kindle can still be a sustainable business model for people?
Yes, I would definitely think so. I'm pretty careful with the wording of the actual product itself. It's definitely going to be self-publishing something, because I'm pretty confident that Kindle might not be the ultimate, like I mentioned before, it might not be the major marketplace in a year or two from now. And actually, I think there's a lot of opportunity in translating your books into other languages and selling your books to foreign publishers. I've struck about, I think, 8 or 9 deals, and they're not major, but I've had a couple of publishers send me $1,000, $2,000 for as an advance on my book. When you kind of get the framework, and once you decide to kind of scale up from Kindle, there's a lot of opportunity outside the Kindle marketplace that you could still have your books in KDP Select and still make money in a lot of other ways. I think those opportunities are only going to grow. So I definitely think there's opportunities to self-publishing. I'm just not too sure, like 100% sure where it's going to go.
Totally. And so when you're doing the foreign rights, I was actually curious about that too. Like, are you reaching out to people and trying to strike deals, or are people coming to you?
It's been 100% reaching out to me. That said, I had my VA a couple months back build this whole massive database of all these other foreign publishers, and I've been kind of afraid to pull the trigger because it'll be literally be a series of cold emails, but I might as well just have her do it. And the worst thing that can happen is just a bunch of foreign publishers get mad at me for kind of spamming their inbox. But kind of what I decided is the actual dividing line of when to approach a foreign publisher and when you should do it on your own is with Amazon. If there's a couple platforms that you can publish into, so you can publish into Dutch, you can publish into Spanish, Brazilian, Portuguese, I'm trying to think, French, Italian, that sort of thing. It's easy just to put a piece of content on your own without even speaking the language and just put it up in the marketplace and sell it in those marketplaces. Thai and complex Chinese, simplified Chinese, the Czech language. These are languages that people would have almost no ability to reach on their own. So it makes complete sense just to even offer for $500 or $1,000 just a book to another foreign publisher. And for me, that's found money. So I'm still working out the kinks as far as foreign publishing, but I think it's a growth industry, and I think in a couple of years it's going to be something that's massive.
Yeah, I agree. I've actually just went on Elance. I mean, I had China reach out to me once about one of my books, but for other ones, I just go on Elance and pay a couple $100 and get it spot checked for Spanish. It's so easy, and it can do some really great royalties there too.
Yeah, absolutely. And I'm kind of like crossing my fingers. I think there's going to be an awesome marketplace. I'm almost thinking Amazon is going to do this in kind of ACX style. And for the people listening, ACX is the platform that's called Audible Creation Exchange. And that's where people can put up their book on that website. And narrators can basically offer their service. And either you do it straight up, you pay them to do it, or you offer a royalty split. I almost hope that Amazon comes out with some type of platform for translation, same thing. People can either do a royalty split or they can just offer a straight up service. And I think that, like, once that happens, it's going to be a game changer.
Oh, that would be so awesome. I know that audiobook thing is only done in the US. It would be amazing if they opened it up to other countries for the translations, because that would just, make it crazy.
Yeah, I guess the point is with this whole self-publishing stuff for people listening, I think it very is much a growth industry. It's not the Kindle Gold Rush. It's not the, I'll put a couple books, I'll use a couple of dodgy techniques, and suddenly my book's going to make a pile of money. I'm not going to put forth any effort to it. I think that opportunity is gone. But I think if people are smart, that they're willing to create micro content and really build a brand around that, I still think there's plenty of opportunity with it.
Yeah, and there's a couple different ways I want to go with this. But I guess the first thing is, I've been telling people that I don't use Kindle much for making money anymore, but I still find it like really great for traffic and opt-ins. I'm curious for you. So I know you said like habit stacking was downloaded 16,000 times in just 1 month in May 2014. How many of those people who looked at your book, how many do you think converted into people on your list?
This is really horrible to admit. I didn't do any tracking on the individual books. And it's funny you brought this up, because I actually implemented a specific tracking for each one of my books only this week. So it's pretty horrible to admit, because I always like talk about tracking. I do know that when habit stacking was doing really well at that time, I was getting anywhere from 200 to 300 opt-ins a day. It was I'm pretty sure, like the 80-20 rule, I'm pretty sure 80% of that was the habit stacking book, and then 20% was all the other books that are out there. So what I do kind of, now that I've done it, now that I'm actually starting to get a lot of good stats on my books, you definitely, even if you have the same email opt-in, I would definitely recommend creating a different tracking link, like even just simply a pretty link. And for people listening, this is a WordPress blog, just install pretty link and just change the links inside every book, even if it goes to the same destination, at least know how many people are clicking on the link for each book. But you really want to start to understand exactly where you're getting your opt-ins from. And I'm kicking myself for not doing this earlier, but I'm pretty sure to answer your question, I was getting... it was getting about 200 opt-ins a day-ish.
And how are you generating the opt-ins? Is it on your front page, or do you mention it a couple times in your book, or both?
It was in the front of my book, and I changed it about 4 or 5 months ago to also in the back of the book. And it's done through Lead Pages software. It's leadpages.net, and it's a really awesome kind of opt-in software, squeeze page. They do a number of things nowadays. It's just a great tool marketplace. But what happens is when they click a link, there's an actual opt-in box that pops up even inside the Kindle book, and that's just all done through Lead Pages. And so they don't necessarily even have to leave the Kindle book experience. They just click the link and it pops up. They enter an email address and they're on my list. And I've actually switched over to single opt-in, which kind of goes against the grain of what people recommend. But I just find that I'm always kind of culling my list. I'm always kind of deleting old kind of emails that really aren't acting on anything. So I'm pretty good about really monitoring my list. So yeah, definitely put it in the front of my book and the back of my book.
Yeah, and I think single opt-in for Kindle books makes sense because if they're on the Kindle experience, the odds are they're not going to go to their Gmail and double opt-in and click the confirmation. By the time they get there, they might forget what they're even opting in for.
Yeah, exactly. And like, I do the regular, I would say every 3 months, I'll look at who hasn't opened up an email in the last 3 months, and I'll just get rid of those people. And just I always try to make sure it's a pretty responsive list. But yeah, I would say as far as list building, it's been mostly the Kindle books. And I've tried SlideShare, I've tried my blog and other a couple other places, but it's really just the email list is, it's weird because the Kindle books help build my email list, which helps me sell more Kindle books, which helps me build my email list. It's very cyclical.
Totally. So, oh my gosh, I have so many questions, but I guess I should quickly ask for people listening, what are you offering to get people to sign up for your list?
I'm doing a very generic, and this is, again, I'm kind of, for everyone out there, I still make mistakes, so hopefully you can learn from this as well. I've had the same offer for all my books, which in retrospect is really not a great thing to do. It's almost better to figure out what are the books that get the most clicks and try to make specific offers for each one of those books. So I've had a very generic 77 Good Habits to Live a Better Life, which it does pretty well. I can't complain, but I feel that if I offered something for each specific audience, then I feel my opt-in rates are going to go up. So kind of the mindset behind tracking these links for the next couple weeks is I want to identify the top 3-4 books that get the most clicks and just create a specific offer for each one of those books. And I think for a Kindle book, any like a list of resources or something really tailored to that audience would be a great opt-in offer.
Yeah, great. And I mean, even if you are keeping it simple, I think a lot of people just taking action in general is important. And if you're still getting 200 to 300 opt-ins per day, I'd say that's still pretty phenomenal.
Oh, I would say now it's more like 50 to 70. So I do. That was at the height of my business, I was getting 200. But yeah, 50 to 70 is still on my time pretty good. So I'm pretty happy with that. But there's always room for improvement.
Yeah, well, I mean, I'm thinking even so that when you're at your height with the 200 to 300 and you had 16,000 downloads of that book, that means 6,000 to 9,000 people opted in out of, and I know like 80-20, it's not all habit stacking, but I'd say that's still a pretty high conversion.
Yeah, absolutely. Nothing sneezes at. And I think part of the reason the couple books right after Habit Stacking, why they did so well, I was just kind of riding the coattails of that one book, and I was able to sell the next couple because it was doing so well, and I was just able to immediately convert those subscribers into follow book buyers.
Awesome. Awesome. So you mentioned micro content. Can you explain what that is? And for you, how do you know which micro content people are going to want to hear about?
Sure. It's kind of a vague, I almost regret throwing it out there because I don't really have a good definition of it, but I would say micro content instead of a massive information product. So kind of analogy that I use is an inch wide and a mile deep. So you take one, so I'm thinking like paleo diet. So instead of trying to talk about the entire paleo diet in one book, you take one thing. So maybe paleo breakfast recipe, something really that small. So, and then you just either you create a Kindle book or you create some piece of content that you sell that really talks about all these different breakfast recipes for the paleo diet. And you just keep on taking that broad massive topic and you really go really in depth about each one of those narrow topics. And I would say that's a pretty decent definition of micro content. You're just, you're really drilling down and providing value instead of like, I'm trying to think like people that are always searching for how to make money online and they get a bunch of very generalized information, but they don't get anything that's really actionable. I would say micro content is very actionable, very applicable to whatever thing you're trying to learn. As far as how can you tell what people want, I've really gotten really into emailing my list, and every time I'm about to write a book or actually for the aforementioned self-publishing product, I'm really into just emailing my list and being honest, hey, I'm going to create a book about X. What is your biggest challenge? And I know that's like one of the oldest marketing adages, ask your list what they want or say what's your biggest challenge, but really you'd be surprised just a simple email that's one line how open and honest people are. And I remember the one, like I actually emailed my list about the exercise habits. Some of the stuff that they wrote back was, it was very eye-opening. It was also kind of depressing a little bit. It's like very, very detailed. So people are really honest when you would just ask them simple questions about like just the struggles they go with on a regular basis. And I was kind of depressed reading through this list. I felt bad for a couple of people. Like challenges where they were married to someone who really was an invalid and they literally had no time because they're 100% caretaker. So it was just stuff that really, my heart goes out to a lot of these people. But I guess, sorry for taking a downturn.
No.
But honestly, the best way to really figure out what people want is just to start asking them questions. Either just send them a cold email for people on your list, or just create simple surveys on your blog and just have three responses and just run a poll and see what people want.
Now, that's awesome. So for people who might not have a list yet, do you recommend like maybe doing a Facebook group or a forum or something?
Yeah, definitely. I would say I see this because I'm a moderator of a Pat Flynn's self-publishing group. And I see this once in a while where someone that I've never seen before pops in, what's your biggest challenge to self-publishing? And pretty much the response that they always get back is, who the hell are you? And I would say you definitely want to get in there. You want to be an active participant and then start asking questions.
Yeah, that's a phenomenal point. That's a really good point because I have a Facebook group too of like, I don't know, maybe 4,200 people in there. And I actually, like, people will go and they'll send people to their articles or their website, or they'll start like, you know, same kind of thing. What's your biggest challenge? And it's kind of frustrating. It's like, you don't get the right to do that just yet.
Yeah, exactly. And there really is. And I've always kind of shied away from forums and social media, but I actually really feel strongly like I really love that particular Facebook group. So it's almost like a sense of ownership that you're like, this is something I really care about. So don't come in here and start messing it up. Like it's, and a lot of people do feel that way when they're part of some sort of organization. They don't like people coming in and just disrespecting the kind of the vibe that people have already established.
Absolutely. So a couple other questions then. One thing that I would love to know, and thank you so much for staying on to answer, is, you know, for if you are making money with your Kindle books, it's definitely better, I've noticed, to have a bunch of books under one name versus the style that I used to do, which is like a bunch of random books under random names. I'm sure you found that too.
Yeah, the reason that I specifically break up my books into, and I actually wish I did something different with the pen name, but I have my S.J. Scott books, which are my habit books, and I have my Steve Scott, which are my internet business books. And the reason I broke those down, the reason I kind of recommend the same thing is readers are, they want to know what to read next. So if you have books that are all over the place, it's really hard for them to figure out what's that next step. And the more confusion and clutter you give, the less likely they are to take that next action. And really, I don't really want a person reads one book. I want someone who's going to end up reading 10, 15 of my books. I want them to read the entire catalog. So if someone's interested in habits and they have a full-time job and you're really happy with their full-time job, I don't want them necessarily looking at my internet business books and being distracted by that, because that's not really helping their particular situation. But if there's someone that's interested in learning about habits, they probably will be interested in my other habit books. And I really feel that when any type of self-publishing business, I would say I would even go as broader as any sort of podcast or blog or any type of content, you really want to figure out what your core audience is and continuously serve them, and don't provide stuff that will distract them. Obviously, if you're really an internet business and a kind of cool way to show that you're a multi-interesting person, perhaps show stuff on social media that here's me training for a marathon, here's something my kids, like stuff like, yeah, obviously you want to show that you have a lot of interest, but when you're presenting them with offers, you don't want to present a bunch of different offers that really don't really make sense being together.
Yeah, great point. And you know, my theory on this too, I think exactly what you're saying. I also feel like, you know, there's so much spam on Kindle and so many crappy books. I feel like if someone's going to go and buy a book from somebody and they like it, it's so much easier for them to go and buy more. And if they see good reviews on something, like, it just makes it that much easier for them to go buy and actually trust that it's going to be good content.
Whatever you can do to help people take that next logical step, the better your business is going to be.
So how much time do you devote to writing books every day? I know you say you do it first thing every morning.
It's gotten to the point where it's different seasons of my life. So when I'm really into a book, like I really have kind of fallen off the wagon the last week or so, like I talked about. But I would say next week, I'm definitely sitting down. I'm devoting at least 15, 20 hours to the next book. And just, I really need to get it out there. When I was a lot more regimented and structured, when I really, my Kindle books were my only thing that I really did, I would say I spend about a good solid 20 hours a week on that. That was a couple hours of writing in the morning and an hour or two of writing in the afternoon. And I really just did that every single day. And it was quite dull, but it was I definitely committed to keeping to that consistent schedule. So I would say for everyone listening, you definitely want to get at least an hour a day of writing. And if you can add more, then definitely you want to add more. But you definitely want to, it's more important to keep the actual consistent schedule to it. And that's really why I feel my business has been suffering a little, because I haven't done what helped me. I haven't continued to do what helped me build the business.
That makes sense. And so you said it's like 15, 20 hours per book?
I would say just 15 to 20 hours of writing per week.
Per week,
On a per book basis, let's see. I would say upwards of 40 to 50 hours per book. That really depends on the length of the content or even how kind of inspired I am. But I would say a rule of thumb for me has been 40 to 50 hours.
Cool. And then your process for you, and I know for people starting out it's different, but I think I remember hearing that you have two proofreaders and a designer, right?
Yes, I tried to proofread all these myself, and I got a lot of negative feedback about that. And then I had someone else proofread, but he was a really good proofreader, but he wasn't necessarily had a background in editing, so I hired one editor. And then I was still seeing a couple of mistakes, so I was like, you know, I'm just going to hire two editors to go over this stuff. So I'm kind of a firm believer in building teams, so I've been kind of evolving over time. So I definitely have a frontline editor who she really goes over the content, makes sure everything's ready to go. And then a last editor who is almost more like a proofreader, just fixing those final mistakes. So that's two people. I have a cover designer, a really good cover designer. I love working with him. And now I actually have a formatter, and the same team that they do a couple things for me. They do formatting, and then they put it into an audiobook. They do something else. Why is it? Oh, and they help me create the print book as well. Obviously, I have my virtual assistant. She does a couple things in the back end to help promote it. So I'm starting to get the point where I'm trying to create systems and just start actually just passing off parts of the process to particular people and having them manage it. I've really been trying to study like systems architecture, and like a book that I reread recently is The E-Myth, and that's a great book and just talks about the idea of building a business that you want to end up owning your business, not necessarily working your business. So I'm really trying to be more conscious about hiring people to do stuff and having them handle instead of me trying to do everything myself.
Absolutely. I think that helps with so much anxiety.
Yeah. Oh, definitely. And it's hard in a given week when you have literally 50, 60 things to do. It's like, oh Lord, what do I do first? And when you actually have this stuff in place, and I'm patting myself on my back because when I started my podcast, I started with the idea that I would create the content, but everyone else would do everything, handle everything else. So I create the content, I put in Dropbox, and it's like auto magic. It just shows up as a published podcast and a published blog. It's a great feeling in the world because I don't really have to necessarily do everything myself.
Oh, that's glorious. You can just create. That's the best part.
Yeah, and I don't necessarily think it's going to be perfect like that with Kindle books because there's a lot of little things I still feel I absolutely have to do myself, but I'm at least trying to move towards that direction.
Yeah, when I was having a bunch of, like when I was writing a bunch of books, I actually had it in an automated fashion where, like I knew that all the books were very high quality, but I was very out of the process because I would have my assistant go through, and for her it was a different process. She would go and find like best-selling books or like categories, and so she would find like what niches to get into, which would get sent to the writer, which would get sent to the proofreader, and then the description maker and the formatter and all that. It was awesome.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, yeah. And I just knew, I mean, from working with those writers, that they were spectacular, and we had an outline process to get really great outlines, and it was awesome.
I love the idea in theory for books, but I'm trying to think, for instance, like say, for instance, I wrote a book that I really didn't have at all my finger in the pie, and for instance, you asked a number of questions from the book. If I just sat there, I'm like, oh, I don't remember writing that, it would have been really disingenuous. As much as I would love the idea of having someone else completely write the other books, I would be scared that if anyone asked me about that and I didn't actually have a good answer because I quote unquote wrote it, then that would look totally off in my opinion.
I totally agree. Actually, I had a meditation book that did really, really well. It was my first book. And I hadn't even, I mean, I read a great deal of it, but I hadn't read it from like front to back. And people were like asking me questions about it. And I was honest with them that I didn't write the thing. But I think it really depends. I mean, for you, like, I don't think it would make sense for your books to be outsourced because you have a voice, you have your name with them. It's not like, I mean, I was just doing the kind of random books that, yeah, but totally. So I know we have to wrap up. So last question, before people can just find out more about you. I would love to hear about what your marketing process is once you launch a book and then like after it dies down too, if there's things that you do to revive it.
It's definitely a work in progress. So if you ask me this question a couple months from now, I probably have a different answer. I don't want to get into the weeds too much, but when you launch a book, you kind of have two options. You could launch it for free inside KDP Select for up to five days, or you can really ignore KDP Select, which I tend to do when I'm launching a book, and just promote it for 99 cents and try to get as many people as possible to buy at 99 cents. And I do that now because I know I have a pretty large audience. I have that email list, I have a blog, I have a podcast that I can hopefully use to promote that as well. And what I try to do is I launch it for 99 cents, but I try to space out the actual promotion of that. So Monday will be list one, Tuesday will be list two. Wednesday would be all social media and a blog post. Thursday would be a reminder email on list one. And then like Friday would be what I'm trying to get into is also paid promotions, and hopefully I'm going to start having paid promotions. They'll drop on Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday as well. So I'm trying to really space